Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am Ted Maxwell and I'm your host for the Engagement Hour. The purpose of the Engagement Hour is to encourage each and every one of you to get involved in some way, shape, or form. There are a lot of different ways to be involved. You can be a leader of a community. That community could be a homeowners association. It could be a charitable organization. It could be a business organization. It might be your business. It might be a group of your friends. But the important thing is to get involved. We want to make this community better. We want to make it what we want it to be. And today I'm honored to have Ed Ackerley as my guest. And to say that Ed has taken a chance and jumped in on several different fronts over his lifetime is absolutely true. Ed, appreciate you being here today. And I really am not sure what I should be calling you. Business executive with Ackerley Advertising, Professor Ackerley, you know, former political candidate Ackerley, or just the brainchild of Jump in Tucson. So how would you like to frame this conversation today?
Well, I'm honored just to be your friend, Ted. It's great. Just my life has been just really precious over the last 60 years. I say the greatest thing about running for mayor, and I would say that's probably about our advertising agency and me teaching students at the University of Arizona, is the relationships that we've been able to develop over the years, and proud to live in Tucson, and I'm proud to know the people that I know here.
Well, Ed, I appreciate you spending the time with me, and we're going to get into all those different facets of your life. But as you know, this is to me about telling people's stories and about how they got involved. So I really would like you to share a little bit more about your background. You were born in Tucson, and where did it go from there?
Right. My folks came to Tucson in 1957. My father was the general manager of a couple of radio stations here, KTAN, KCUB, and KCEE. And in 1968, he started Ackerley Advertising. So, ironically, at age 10, I was working at Ackerley Advertising on Saturdays, and I went to school here. Went to a private school up until middle school. Then I went to Carson. Then I went to Palo Verde High School, and then I went on to the University of Arizona and graduated in 79 with a degree in radio and television. Who knew that 50 years later I'd be on the radio? And then got into teaching, and in 2006 got my doctorate. And so I've had kind of three tracks in my life. It's been the advertising agency, teaching, and politics is the most recent.
So let's start with the advertising phase of it. How did that begin? Now, I mean, your dad was obviously involved in radio, which I always learned something new about my guests, and I did not know that. So he was involved in the radio, but how did the Ackerley Advertising come about?
Well, he was, as I said, manager of three stations, and his last station was KCEE 790 AM at the time. And at that time in the late 60s, AM radio was the thing. And so he worked for some pretty powerful stations over the years. You know, he had finished up Bob Strauss, who was the Democratic National Chairperson for the DNC, was the owner of the KCEE, and he went on to be the ambassador to Russia. He owned the station, and when, at the end of that, my parents just decided that maybe moving on to the advertising agency business might be wise. So there's a long story behind that, but my dad pacing back and forth in the living room, and my mom just saying, "Gene, just go ahead and do it. You know more about advertising than anybody else in this town. Just make it happen." So they started out on May 1st, 1968. They had three clients. They had Elkon Mall. They had, at the time it was called Elkon Shopping Center. They had Levy's Department Store, which was a big, giant department store. And then they had Montgomery Ward. So they started with three pretty big clients. And you know, we're still in business 57 years later. So interesting start to the agency.
So you actually started with the agency when you were still in high school, as
right.
best I can tell from the dates listed on your CV.
Right.
And that kind of was a passion, but you obviously had more passions. We can say that advertising does a lot to share information with the community. Mm-hmm. It's part of it out there, but that didn't seem like it was enough of what I would call giving back and making the difference.
Right.
Great business, you know, absolutely, advertising is critical through in our society for so many reasons. But the teaching piece, how did you get involved in that? Because I actually thought it was something you just picked up a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, it was back about 35 years ago, 37 years ago now, I guess. I was actually sitting at my desk, and I got a call from Dr. Francine Trotter, and she said, hey, I've got a class down at Pima College. It's an advertising, beginning advertising marketing class, and we don't have an instructor. Would you mind going down tomorrow and hanging out with them and just tell them some war stories? You know, I was just a young kid. What am I, you know, it's in my late 20s, early 30s. What am I supposed to talk about? So just talk about your agency and what you do for a living. So I said, well, okay, where is it and what do I got to do? No textbook, no syllabus, no nothing. Just go down and walked in. There's a bunch of 13th and 14th graders that were forced to be there because their parents wanted them to go to school. They had no interest in me or the subject matter per se. And I got in there and I talked about my company and what I did for a living. And, hour and 15 minutes later, I leave, and it was later in the afternoon. And so the next morning she called me. She said, how did it go? And I said, well, it was okay. I said, I don't know if I told them anything that was meaningful. I just told them about myself and what I did. And we had this little conversation. She says, do you mind doing it again tomorrow? We still don't have a teacher. So I did it again. And so on Friday morning, she called me and said, how'd it go? I said, I don't know. I think I did okay. Again, I had nothing to tell them because I didn't have any books or anything.
The kids did show up that second day?
They did come the second day. And so she called me and I said, why don't you take the job? Why don't you be the teacher? And that was my entrance. And I had no interest in being a teacher or had any ideas that I was going to be a teacher. So I started at Pima and did that for several years. And then I got a call from Mary Beth Horolovich at the University of Arizona. They needed a new instructor to teach a class in radio and television. At the time, it was called Media Arts. And they needed an instructor because Al Hemphill had left. And they didn't have an instructor for this class. It was creativity. And it had been funded by the broadcasters for a while. And so we went to Arizona Inn, and I dutifully gave her a list of 10 names of people I thought would be good to teach this class, advertising people and media people and so forth. And we went down them one at a time, had lunch, and talked about the class. And at the end of the class, she looked at me, she said, why don't you teach the class? And I'm like, I'm not applying for a job. I don't necessarily want the job. So I started. And started over in the fine arts department. And then about 2 or 3 years later, I got a call from the Eller College saying, hey, we're here, what you're doing over at fine arts. Can you come do it for us? And that's how I got into the Eller College.
And you've been doing that ever since. When we come back after the break, I'm going to take us to talk a little bit more about the education piece and the impact it's had on you and on the community. Because I've long said on this show, teachers are doing community service. Amen. They're making our place a better place to live. So that was Ed Ackerley, and you're listening to Ted Maxwell and Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 The Voice. Welcome back, and thank you for being with us this morning. I've got Ed Ackerley, president and CEO of a business organization, a Professor Ackerley, and the brainchild behind Jump in Tucson. We're going to hit on those. I don't want to leave the professor side of it right now. Okay. You started back in mid 80s. Mm-hmm. You're over 35 years now, still teaching at the college level. Last year, you were recognized as the most outstanding marketing professor at Eller College. Mm-hmm. So you've become very good at what you do, obviously, but there's got to be more to it because you're having an impact on lives. So can you talk about what you've seen and some of those things over the years that keep you passionate about giving back to the students?
I've had a little practice for getting guests on Jump in Tucson by teaching the last 3 or 4 decades. I get people like General Ted Maxwell and other people to come in and talk to my students. And that sounds silly. It's harder than people think, to schedule in advance and to make sure the person's coming and all that. And some of my other colleagues at this school and other schools don't do that because they realize how difficult that is to bring people in. But I get to bring in my friends and colleagues who can deliver some real-world experiences for students in a unique and different way. I call it edutainment, where we do education and entertainment at the same time to keep the students engaged. And I feel really passionate about that we can make a difference in young people's lives. And so trying to make each of the classes that we do every single day something that they're going to want to come back for the next day and be excited about.
Well, I'll tell you, I do enjoy coming in once every semester. And actually, I've taught at your NAU class as well.
Correct.
With the, you know, the Master's in Education.
That's an interesting thing, too. When I got my promotion at the U of A, normally they make you give up teaching at not necessarily a rival institution, but another state institution. And they granted me the ability to continue to do that because I've been doing that also for many, many years. And they just said, you know, that's not a... I teach in the education department over there, so it's not really competing with the business college. So they let me keep that, which has been really nice.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I appreciate about your students is you're not just teaching them the details. Obviously, you get a lot of speakers to come in and talk about different things. I talk mm-hmm. a lot about leadership, particularly leadership in crisis areas, you know, from military experience and such, and share stories, which I think you've got a broad, diverse group of stories coming in. But what I'm really impressed is I think you're giving them some life skills too.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you do, I won't say demand because that's not what professors do, but you strongly encourage all your students to write thank you letters.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an email, whether I've received emails, I've received handwritten notes, which sometimes come 2 weeks later because the mail is different than email, you know.
Right.
And I've always been impressed by the percentage of students, and I've never tried to calculate it, but I know it's high.
Mm-hmm.
And so why are you doing that as well? It's not part of your curriculum necessarily.
I've always viewed college as kindergarten for life. What I mean by that is that we do have to prepare these students to go out into the real world and engage and jump in and get involved in their communities, whether it be here if they stay in Tucson or if they go somewhere else. So I encourage them to get involved in their professional associations, to get involved in government, to get involved in their communities. And so I like to teach them life skills that they can take and use in that endeavor, everything from great presentations. I was just this morning looking at an email that a young lady who was in my class sent me. She's a intern for a company, and she had written 4 introductory emails that she was going to send to clients, and she asked me to look them over. And what I did was basically her email was, I am a person, and I am selling, and I have stuff, and I want, and I turned it around, and I said, you need to look at this from the customer's point of view and say, you have customers, you have needs, you have things that you need to get done, let us help you. And I flipped it around and gave her that life skill. She was amazed by the ability to do that. So I think life skill is and real life experience is a powerful tool for these young people.
Well, you've expanded from just teaching marketing. Obviously, you work in the marketing department out there, and you don't teach just advertising anymore. You teach everything from leadership to communication to other areas. How have you kind of built your background and knowledge to do kind of a variety of courses inside of U of A?
I would say that my most favorite thing to teach is leadership, even though I've been teaching the advertising class since I started. I love advertising. I do advertising every single day, and I can do it with my eyes closed. But I'm a student of leadership, and I just love leadership, and I love to talk about it and love to teach it and love to try to get other people excited about it as well. And so I think probably my own personal interest in leadership has led to classes in communications that would be professional leadership or communication and leadership, and working with the Eller Executive Education. If you know, a company wants a session in leadership, I'm one of the guys that's on the bench to come out and do that. I find that to be interesting. But, you know, that leads into politics, but also civic engagement. And I've been chairman of many, 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 many nonprofit groups. I just gravitated toward that ever since I was a little kid in elementary school.
That's kind of the advantage of interviewing another radio host, is you just made the transition smoothly into the next phase of what I wanted to talk about. And that was, we've talked about your advertising business. We've talked about you being a professor, but there's also part of the community that you continue to explore, and that is, and have had a lot of lift in that area, and that's some of the charitable organizations. So can you talk about how you first got involved in doing that? Was it a byproduct of your advertising business, or was it just a passion you had?
I would say it probably started in my elementary school days, and so I became active in my church, and I became eventually the chairman of the parish council. I became the youth minister for a couple of years. I ran a sports league for a dozen years for high school students on the East Side. So I kind of gravitated towards leadership just as a young man. In football and college, I was, you know, one of the leaders. And I just, leadership is exciting to me, and I just kind of gravitate towards that and try and learn as best I can. So it kind of started just by my interest in it. And then when you're an advertising guy, people come to you for help wanting to tell their story about what they've got going on. So just by definition, I've been involved in hundreds of nonprofit organizations that have asked for some leadership help.
Well, we talk about everybody's got the potential to engage, to jump mm-hmm. in. The nonprofit world's a big space for it mm-hmm. because everybody can pick where their passion is. Mm-hmm. But generally, we know where our passions is. We may give, we may volunteer, but they don't really jump in. What advice would you have for somebody that wanted to get involved in the nonprofit world?
Well, I think that there are endless opportunities in Tucson. The urban myth is that there's more nonprofits per capita in Tucson than anywhere in the nation. And then, you know, that's probably true.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if that's actually an urban myth or if it's fact,
yeah.
But it is out there.
It is amazing how many nonprofits there are, all competing for the same sponsors and dollars.
Absolutely.
And it gets a little crazy after a while. The door just keeps knocking on those car dealers and home builders and apartment complex owners and so forth who have a little bit of wherewithal to spread around, but it's difficult for them to spread it to all of these groups. And so, that's where we need volunteers and people to step forward and say, I want to help and come and do whatever I have to do to help this little organization. So I've been very successful in doing that over the years.
What are your top two or three that you're supporting now?
Well, I would say that over the last 15 years or so, we started Coaches for Charity, which is a charity for high school athletes. We do four major events. We do the MLK basketball tournament in McHale Center for high school kids. We do the football kickoff classic, the first games out of the gate for high school football. That's really been a great, great event. We do the Ross Grooch Cougar Classic with Dale Lopez and help him. That's a middle school basketball tournament on high school courts. And then we have this bowl-a-thon that we do every year that raises money for student equipment for elementary schools, specifically in TUSD. And so I like that one. I also was involved for many years as the president and a board member, been about a dozen years now, the Rito Park Foundation. That's the facility out at First and River. I'm not a big horse guy myself, but it was a community organization. The big thing there is you know, the fear of knocking it down and making it into an industrial park or something like that. It's just it's like the rodeo. It's like spring baseball. It's like other things that we've had in Tucson. We got to make sure that we don't lose these historical things.
And I'd say the Rieto is very much defining of Pima County. It's mm-hmm. kind of our history. It's like you said, it's a historical site. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about the racing. And can you kind of elaborate a little bit of why you think it's so important? You kind of touched on it, that we keep those kind of events and attractions and facilities around.
It's amazing to me over the years how many people have come up to me and said, when I was a little kid, my grandparents or my granddad or my dad would bring me out to Rieto and we'd watch a few races, and what a great experience it was for them. And so I think it does have a lot of historical value, 1943, and just the whole concept of thoroughbred racing starting at the track. And quarter horse racing starting at the track. Then later on, they introduced quarter horse racing, where you go around in a circle. Quarter horse goes straight through the sprints. And it's just an amazing historical thing, right in the middle of Tucson, too, in a beautiful location right in the middle of Tucson with great views of the Catalina Mountains. It's just a gem that I think that we need not lose. Certainly there's people that don't think that horse racing or dog racing or any kind of animal racing is good for the animals. But I'm here to tell you, especially when the Clydesdales come, they're treated better than Clydesdales have better accommodations than I do. And it's amazing what these horsemen and volunteers do. So I'm all for keeping traditions alive in Tucson.
Well, I know it's quite an event when you do go out there, and it's not just about the racing. There's other things to it, but I do think there's important traditions in Tucson that we need to keep, and that's been Ed Ackerley. We're already halfway through, as hard as it is to believe, and look forward to getting back with you on after the break. listening to KVOI 1030 The Voice. Well, that's a little Bruce Springsteen bringing us back in for the second half hour of Jumpin' Tucson, the engagement hour. Matt Neely is behind the glass, keeping us on time and target. That's going to be the new line I think I'm going to say every time when we bring you back in. My guest today is Ed Ackerley. We've talked about his business and his teaching and his charitable contributions where he's gotten engaged and involved. And now I've told him I'm going to talk to him for about the next 10 minutes about an area he may not want to talk about quite as much, but it's just as significant because it tells you a little bit about who he is and the importance for it to go. We sometimes forget that we are a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country, and others, service to our community, as well as being an informed and an engaged voter. So Ed Ackerley.
Mm-hmm.
8 years ago, roughly, no, I guess it's 5 years ago now, you decided you were going to step up, and I think it was might have even been your tagline, jump in, mm-hmm. and you were going to make a run for mayor of the city of Tucson. What inspired you with everything else you had going on to say, you know what, I think I'm going to get into politics?
Well, I happen to, you know, I'm a friend. I'm not a real good friend, but I'm a friend of Jonathan Rothschild's. He's talked to my classes for the last 10 years. He comes in and we go to lunch every once in a while. And I just saw him just a couple of days ago. He's a good guy. And he let me know that he wasn't going to run again for a third term. And when he announced that he wasn't going to run, I just thought about it and thought we need some leadership, continue some good leadership in Tucson. And I kind of knew who the other candidates were going to be. And so I thought that I would jump in and see if I could provide my leadership skills. I do have to say that I was a lifelong Democrat. My parents grew up in the Depression, and they were, FDR Democrats, where government didn't save them, but it certainly helped. And everybody pitched in and got engaged in the process and got us through World War II. And everyone chipped in and tried to make the community better. As I was growing up, I consider myself a John F. Kennedy Republican and a Ronald Reagan Democrat, in the sense that kind of right down the middle of the road, ask not what your city can do for you, ask what you can do for your city. And, let's tear down these walls, in the sense of let's get together and work together to make this happen. And so it just seemed like the right time. I had a wealth of experience, and I actually reaffiliated with the independent no-party affiliation to run, and I did that strategically for a reason, and I did it because, I knew I would get crushed in the Democratic primary because there were a couple of Democrats that were going to be running that had a lot better name value than I did. So.
That was definitely, I would say, not crowded field. There was three candidates that ran there. I remember when SLC hosted the mayoral candidate, a candidate Ackerley showed up at the front door and reminded everybody when they were walking in that he doesn't understand why he's not on the stage.
Right.
But as I told you then, we knew we didn't want this to be about the Democrats attacking you. We wanted to see the differences between them.
Right.
You ran that time, and then that year you garnered almost 40% of the vote,
right.
Just under 40% of the vote, which I think surprised a lot of people. They were very impressed with it, but for you, ultimately, it meant you weren't the mayor.
Yeah, well, I would say that too. You know, when you have an open field and there's no incumbent running, it's always easier for an outsider to come in and maybe get a little extra push because, you know, they're looking for somebody new and different. When you run against an incumbent like I did the second time, it's much more difficult because that person has a track record and also has a pretty strong following. And so coming in as an outsider, or specifically an independent, it's a difficult, and history has proved that out over many, many years. If you run as an off-brand candidate like I did, it's really tough to beat the machine.
So the decision to run the second time,
mm-hmm.
knowing that you had a clear field against a non-incumbent, and you achieved 40%, which is a significant number. I mean, that's a lot of votes inside the city of Tucson, especially for an independent. The next time through, you knew you were going to run against a incumbent, and the Republican Party had committed to running people in all of the city elections that year, mm-hmm. but you still decided you were going to give it a shot.
Yeah, well, a current office holder who was thinking about running for mayor, we went to coffee, and he decided that he looked right at me and said, "You're obviously the better candidate than I, and I'm going to step aside and run for this other office." And he did, and he won. And I was alone by myself against the incumbent for quite some time. I was the first one to declare. I let everybody know that I was running. Everybody knew that I was running. A little while later, another independent jumped into the race, and that caused a little bit of disharmony amongst some people, and that person didn't make it to the ballot because of signatures. But then right at the 11th hour, a Republican jumped into the race, and had I been able to run head to head with the incumbent, I probably would have had a much better shot at magnifying the differences between us and what my leadership skills would be. But by the time we got to the general, my side of it had been so watered down that it was very difficult to get that message through. And quite frankly, you got to have money to run. And the second time around, the money just wasn't there as like it was the first time.
I agree. I think there was a lot of lessons learned potentially. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on that one, because you did. As you mentioned, you had an incumbent. You had to clear that field. Mm-hmm. You had an incumbent. You had an independent that jumped in. You had to clear that field, right. And you did. And then you had the Republican come in, and it's much more difficult money to go of what's a possibility to what's looking tough, but you stuck through the entire campaign and took it in because you had committed. Committed to a lot of people, you're going to do that. What would you say your biggest lessons learned with the second race, or through both of them, actually, in basically the 5 years you were committed to running for office?
Yeah, there's an old term called tee it up. If I ran again, ever again, instead of me declaring that I was...
Did you just say if?
Yeah. If I ever ran again, and I would not say, I declare and I am going to run for this office. I'd want it to be the other way around. I would want the community members to come to me and say, we've looked at the field. We need you, and we're going to support you, and we're going to back you, and we're going to raise money for you, and we're going to put an infrastructure behind you that'll make it easier for you to do this. Because quite frankly, the second time we ran, we were pretty much all alone on an island, and it was just a handful of us that were trying to get me the recognition that I needed and the money that we needed. And with a three-way race like there was, it was very difficult to get the... I thought I had a good technique. I went to about 200 churches over the course of 2.5 years, and met with lots of people. Es muy importante porque hay muchas personas en tu son que habla español. I was speaking Spanish. I was trying to engage with the Hispanic population. I did a really good job of that. Went to a lot of activities, was everywhere, sometimes 15 events a week. We did everything we could to get our word out. It's just when the field is split like that, it's very difficult to make some headway.
Oh, especially if you look at the demographics. And mm-hmm. I think some people forget sometimes when they step into a race that there's those demographics. Now, obviously, you knew what you were getting into. And I'll give you credit for sticking it all the way through the end. But I know it was very difficult. It was difficult on you from a fundraising standpoint. Yeah. From you had all the support. And then over the years, it dwindled. But right. it's part of putting yourself out there sometimes and getting engaged. You said if, I don't want to cover the if, but would you do it all again?
I certainly would. Two things. One is, I don't know if people remember when I did run against an incumbent, against an open field, against other people in other parties. I never said anything negative about the other candidates per se.
You were criticized for that.
I was.
As well.
People really came after me that I wasn't naming names and calling them names and being sophomoric about my approach. And instead, what I did was call out policy and call out what I would do if I was in the office and what I would do to provide leadership. And the reason I did that was my folks and my company has spent the last 60 years developing a reputation and some integrity in the marketplace. And I didn't want to destroy that in one cycle of running for an office, to take all that our family has gained over that time and just send it away. And so integrity and ethics were really part of what we were trying to do.
Well, and I think you ran your campaign that way. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that way. So I don't think you've necessarily harmed the brand. But you made a couple decisions coming out of it, what the next step was going to be. And so when we return to Jump in Tucson, we're going to talk about Jump in Tucson. So you're listening to KVOI 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Ted Maxwell, and we'll be right back. Welcome, and thank you for being with us this morning. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the engagement hour. If you tune in at 9 o'clock tomorrow, you'll hear Jump in Tucson with Grant Kruger, and I encourage you to do so. If you tune in next Tuesday at 9 o'clock, you will also hear Grant Kruger, and it won't be the engagement hour. Grant is going to sit in for me on Tuesday, and I'm going to take his show next Wednesday. So if you're looking for Grant, you wait till Wednesday, you're going to be extremely disappointed when you get Ted Maxwell. So I'm with Ed Ackerley, Professor Ackerley, business leader Ackerley. And what I want to focus this last 8.5 minutes is talk about Jump in Tucson. Right. Ed, this was kind of your brainchild. You came to me last December and said, listen, I'm looking for some folks that would join me in taking the 9 to 10 o'clock hour and to make it a positive, to tell the stories about people, tell the stories about issues, and you wanted all 5 days to be something different. As the listeners of this show know, you're carrying Monday and Fridays. We're hoping, you know, that Monday you'll get some relief on that one, but you've got basically 5 different shows with 5 different topics. How did you get to this idea to step into a radio show?
Well, I just have to say that a couple of my advisors came to me during the campaign and said, you're probably going to get shellacked here and you're probably going to lose, and so brace yourself.
You love advisors that tell you that up front.
Yeah. And they were right, and we knew the writing was on the wall, the funding wasn't there, and there's no polls at a municipal election like this, but we could tell that we didn't have the traction that we had. And they were the ones that proposed to me, why don't you give this a shot? And so that's when we decided to talk about the good things. If there's one thing, Ted, that I've learned from running for mayor and living in Tucson all these years, but specifically running for mayor, people would come up to me. Certainly they'd want to tell me what's wrong with Tucson, what's wrong with the current government, what's wrong with the current city council, and what you could do better as a candidate, and they would give me all that. But to a person, they'd always tell me why they love Tucson and why they want to be here and why they live here, why they came here, why they stay here. And so I think there's some value to that, and that's what Jump in Tucson is about. Let's talk about the successes that we've had in Tucson and not always talk about all the horrible things that are going on.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the reasons I jumped at the opportunity is I wanted to talk about the responsibilities we have as citizens of being engaged. And I'd seen through other individuals' engagement, whether it's been through the nonprofit world, whether it's been through politics, whether it's just been through leadership, just getting out there and getting involved, that's how you make a difference. So all those folks that come to you over the years saying, hey, we've got problems here. Yeah, you know what we do? Every community does, but we've got plenty of problems here. The only way to fix them is to get engaged and get involved. And I do think sometimes we don't tell enough of the good stories, which I think different shows, again, 5 different shows, different focuses.
Right.
How did you come up with the idea of doing it in that way, where you're going to actually pick 5 different areas that we were going to talk about?
Well, I had this idea that, business success stories, which I do on Friday, would be difficult to do 5 days a week. That would get a little tiresome after a while. But I also knew that the U of A had a wealth of things going on. And at the time, of course, there was financial problems. There was a tragedy that happened on campus. There was one thing after another that caught the headlines and the local TV stations. But it didn't represent the totality of what's going on at the University of Arizona. And so I knew that one of those days needed to be devoted to the elephant in the room. Without the University of Arizona in the middle of our town, what would we have? We'd have DM and we'd have Raytheon and maybe a couple of Walmarts, and that'd be about it. And so people need to realize the good things that are going on at the U of A. And then when we talk to you and to Grant, Grant's basically doing Wednesday. In the beginning, it was a favor to me, but I think he's kind of getting into it a little bit.
Oh, he's good. Yeah. I keep telling him I don't want him going anywhere. And he does a good job of blending the food conversation.
Right.
And he's got a little of that political angle as well.
He does. And then Tom does Thursdays, and Visit Tucson is considering jumping into that spot with him so that we can talk broader about the attractions and the hotels. So I think it's a unique smorgasbord, if you will, of topics and information, and it's been successful. You know, we doubled the ratings from December to January. We doubled the ratings from January to February. We doubled the ratings from February to March. We doubled. So we went from 2 to 4 to 8 to 16.
I was gonna say, we're up to 20 now. Yeah. We're smoking.
But I think we're offering some content that is, you know, people want to hear who the people are that are in their community that are doing well and doing good things for our community. They don't always want to listen to the horrible things that are going on.
Well, and I've enjoyed that piece of it because I learned something new about every guest I've got. And most of the guests that I've brought on are people I've known, whether it's through SALC in the business community, through the military community, through my engagement in public policy space. What have you found as the most challenging thing to pull something like this off to this point?
Well, from my perspective is, you know, I teach full-time a couple of schools. I have an advertising agency I got to run and with my brother and try and make a living there. It actually, the hardest part of this job is getting the guests because I do 4 a week. I do 2 on Friday and 2 on Monday. So it's constant. It just never goes away. It's, as someone said, it's like feeding a monster. You just got to line up the guests. And we had one occasion so far where someone didn't come in. And what do you do for that segment? You punt and make it up as you go. So
well, when I was seeking advice on this, that was the first thing I was told by, and it was Christy Simone that I sat with for probably 2 hours talking about the pros and cons, the difficulties and challenges. He said, you better be ready for the first time you don't have a guest no-show.
Right.
To him, that was the biggest faux pas he ever had in his young radio career, you know, 15 years ago, was when he wasn't prepared. And then he was, you know, a lot of, what's next?
Yeah.
So who was the one no-show? Was that on one of your shows?
It was on one of my shows, and it was just a misunderstanding. They thought they were scheduled another time, and we were ready to fly. And now, fortunately, I had Sixto Molina with me, my campaign chair. He comes in occasionally and helps me co-host, and Lydia Ronda's been here, and Roman Camposano, and Alan Caith, and so I've had people come in and sit with me. So when that does happen sometimes, my brother's always with me, so he and I can talk about some things.
So we're coming up on 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about
happy anniversary.
Thank you. We've talked about some of the numbers and how they appear to increase. And we, you know, jokingly talked about how small they were. But I was actually fairly impressed with the number of folks that are listening. Mm-hmm. What's next? What's next for Jump in Tucson?
Well, I think we need, quite honestly, in order to sustain what we're doing as robust as it is, we need some more sponsors and some more advertisers to buy into this. It's like running a political campaign. Money drives the ship.
So if you're listening, you know, pick up the phone, call Ed Ackerley at Ackerley Advertising and tell them that you want to be part of the sponsorship for the engagement hour on Tuesdays.
Yeah. But I think we're in good stead, and hopefully the hosts on the daily basis will continue, and the great, great lineup of guests. I've just been so impressed with the guests. I think we'll, you know, keep another 6 months of the same format and try and bring good quality radio to the audience. But, you know, there's another side of it, which I think is really cool, especially on the Friday shows. And again, on the Monday shows that I host, and probably the same is true for you, is the people that are coming in and actually sharing their story. They stand up here and they are just amazed that they had a chance to share their story with the world. And I think that is really a benefit, a side benefit to this, that we're highlighting some really powerful people who've done some great work in Tucson. So I want everybody to jump in.
I fully agree with you, and I'll piggyback on that. Most of the folks that I've brought in are known names. Not all of them, but a lot of them are known names in the community, like mm-hmm. yourself. You always learn something a little bit more about each individual. And to the listener, that is your opportunity to get engaged. Figure out how you can do it.
Right.
You know, I hope that our 9 to 10 o'clock hour is being received like it's intended. Mm-hmm. It's to tell the stories about Tucson.
You've been doing a great job, and so has Grant and Tom. I really appreciate the good work you guys have been doing.
Well, I appreciate you for joining me today, Ed. And we look forward to hearing or speaking to you every day on Jump in Tucson. Everybody have a great week, and we'll see you next weekend.